Thank you, thank you. Thank you, that's very nice of you. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you. Well, thank you. That's very, very nice of you. Thanks for that warm welcome. And, Mike, thank you for the nice introduction. I appreciate it immensely. I so admire the work you do also, and I want everybody to know that this is one of the first-class people in his industry. So, Mike, it's good to be here with you. Speaking of delivering bad news, I have a story. I'll start with a story today. I've shared it, so maybe you've heard it before. I had just been elected the governor of Nebraska, but I hadn't been sworn in yet. And I was invited to go to Kearney, Nebraska, where I was to be a speaker at an event like this. And so my wife, Stephanie, and I drove out to Kearney. It's kind of in the central part of the state. And we got there, and same sort of deal. Very nice meal, just like we've had, and nice introduction, just like Mike has done. And same thing, as I'm making my way to the podium, everybody stood up and applauded. And so I got to the podium, and I said, ladies and gentlemen, that's really very nice of you, but I haven't done anything yet. And somebody in back yelled out, and when you do, we won't be standing. So so it is good to have a nice, warm welcome after doing this job for a couple of years. Well, I have a number of things I'm going to talk to you about today, and what I'd like to do is, if we have time, I'd like to just take some questions. So you might be thinking about something you want to ask me, and I'll be happy to take a few questions before we head out the door. Well, as agribusiness leaders and as professionals, you know how important it is to maintain a safe and abundant supply of food for our nation. And St. Louis has certainly made a major contribution towards the success of that effort, and I congratulate you for that. The farmland in this bi-state area is among the most productive anywhere in the world, and the people here have made St. Louis an important agricultural hub worth an estimated $23 billion. From beverage manufacturing to agricultural inputs, pet food to food manufacturing and agricultural production to biotechnology, St. Louis has helped the nation achieve multiple production and export records in the past few years. In fact, I understand that St. Louis is now being called the heart of BioBelt because so many biotechnology companies are located in the area. And since 1981, the St. Louis Agribusiness Club has been supporting agriculture. And I can't think of a greater mission. So please accept my best wishes on the occasion of your 25th anniversary. May your next quarter century be as successful as the first. This afternoon, I thought you might be interested in hearing about the state of American agriculture, how agricultural policies of the past and the present have brought us to a crossroads that will determine their collective future. You know, it's been an amazing time for agriculture, although not necessarily an easy one. While some parts of the country are experiencing really good crop conditions, drought is taking a toll on farming and ranching operations in other parts of the United States. Now, here in Missouri, drought is a concern, especially in cattle regions, since cattle and calf production is the second most important ag commodity in Missouri in terms of the value of receipts. Some places in western and southwestern Missouri started the spring planting season reporting 18 months of below average rainfall. It's not a good way to start. Corn is being harvested about a month early, and yields are hard to estimate since most stalks have ears, and many of those ears look normal in size, but you won't know until the combines run. Soybeans continue to hold on for cooler, wetter weather in some parts of the country. Actually, in some parts of the country, corn and soybeans have enjoyed near record yields this year, even in some areas where we expected very poor yields because of drought. So we'll see what the combines tell us as they get into harvest. I can assure you that USDA is not waiting, though, to provide drought assistance to those who are in need. Last night, I approved an extension of emergency grazing on Conservation Reserve Program acres. While I was in South Dakota recently, I saw firsthand the value of emergency hay in the grazing program. When I toured a ranch where bales from CRP lands lined the drive. For Missouri, if your state committee agrees with the need for an extension, this will allow grazing on CRP land until November 10th. There is more action we have taken. In August, Governor Blunt asked our Farm Service Agency to begin gathering information for damage assessment reports. They have been completed for 96 counties and sent to the governor's office. Also last month, I announced that USDA was making $780 million in assistance available nationwide to help farmers and ranchers manage drought and weather-related production challenges. USDA is committed to using every resource that I have at my disposal to help farmers and ranchers who are impacted by these drought conditions. My last thought on easing the impact of drought is that any new agricultural emergency assistance passed by Congress really needs to be focused on farmers who have suffered rather than broad, inequitable payments that just get spread everywhere. It would be hard to support a disaster package that provides nearly $2 billion in extra direct payments to program crops, but only $100 million to specialty crops and livestock. So we stand ready to do all we can to help farmers and ranchers in drought. We'll do everything we can to try to ease them through this difficult year. Now, the past year has been full of challenge and possibility because in the end, that's what American agriculture has always been about, realizing the vast potential that built this dynamic industry. You know, productivity has never been better. And the promise for the future has never been brighter. Just this week, USDA forecast that farmers this year will harvest the second largest corn and soybean crop on record. Even in the face of higher energy prices and natural disasters, our farm economy's resilience is remarkable. Domestic demand for farm products has soared, and we're forecasting a fourth consecutive year of record agricultural exports, expected to reach $68 billion this year and cross into the $70 billion arena next year. That's equal to about one quarter of farm cash receipts. It's significant success for our farmers and ranchers, and we're determined to continue to build on that success. For the last 3 years in a row, farm net worth has grown by about $90 billion per year, and we expect the same to hold true in 2006. Farm equity, I'm happy to report to you, is at a record high, a staggering, eye-popping $1.6 trillion. And we expect the debt-to-asset ratio by the end of this year to be the lowest in 45 years. I believe the flexibility and the ingenuity of our farmers and our ranchers are among the reasons U.S. agriculture is one of the most remarkable success stories maybe ever in history. Irrigation techniques are improving, better seed stocks are being developed, and farmers are planting earlier. Today, producers grow more crops and handle more livestock more efficiently than any time in the history of this country. One need only look at ever-increasing yields as proof. And ladies and gentlemen, I have to tell you, I don't think you've seen anything yet. While our resilient agricultural sector continues to contribute to a strong economy, there are concerns that have to be addressed for this good news to continue, and I will get to those in a moment. But if you step back and look at American ag as a whole, there is one constant that I can promise you, and that is it's going to change. The fact is, for roughly 70 years, we have operated in a basic rural policy matrix that was created in the Depression era. That model assumed that rural America was dominated by farming and ranching and forestry and mining, and it was oriented largely toward agricultural stabilization. In 1940, there were 6 million farms in the United States. Today, two-thirds of them are gone. Of the farms that remain, about 150,000 across the entire country, still mostly family-owned and operated, produce most of our food and our fiber. These are, however, a small minority. Most of America's farmers work in town and part-time. Across the spectrum, large and small, approximately 90% of total farm family income is from non-farm sources. Let me repeat that statistic. 90% of total farm family income is now from non-farm sources. Bottom line, rural America today is diversified, it's dynamic, and it's wired into the global economy. Growth is driven primarily by markets, not governmental programs, and the competition is stiff. That's why market access is so important. I think a lot of people here know that I'm an advocate for creating opportunities for trade. I spent a great deal of time and effort since coming to the job negotiating for a successful resolution to the Doha round of World Trade Organization free trade talks. With exports equal to about one quarter of farm cash receipts, market access is absolutely critical to the future of American agriculture. Put another way, 1 in 3 acres nationally is planted for export. 1 out of 5 rows of U.S. corn is planted for export. Because we are so productive, we have an obligation to the future to consider the big picture. The fact is that U.S. agricultural productivity is quite simply outpacing consumption in this country. And that productivity grows about 2% every year, year after year after year. Our population and consumption, by comparison, grow at a number that's less than 1% a year. Now chart that over the next 2 decades, and you begin to realize the importance of world markets. So the 95% of the world's population that lives outside of the United States, customers and potential customers for the American farmer and rancher, truly represents a significant part of our future. We're striving through these trade talks to make sure we have fair access to these markets. Now, to be very honest, I'm disappointed that we have no agreement today. Before the talks were stalled, we reached a number of very important agreements, though, and I have to point out to you, we will lose without a successful conclusion to this Doha round. For instance, we agreed to eliminate all export subsidies by 2013. Export subsidies are generally used in the European Union. That was to occur in exchange for market access. This is a significant step, but one that will not take place without a final agreement. Free trade benefits, well, they help everybody. It encourages prosperity in developed countries and helps create economic stability and economic opportunity in developing and least developed nations. Agriculture is one of the essentials of life. It's the foundation of society. Without an adequate food supply, people have no opportunity to strive for anything beyond mere subsistence and survival. In the 21st century, we must aspire for more. Now more than ever, it is essential that we get international ag policy right. Actually, it is not an exaggeration to say that lives are depending upon it. In nations like the United States, where we are fortunate enough to have a plentiful food supply and enough abundance to sell our ag products to other countries, free trade is still of great consequence. Our farmers and ranchers are developing more sophisticated and efficient techniques. Our productivity continues to increase. And in order to preserve our economic health, we need more markets for our growing harvests. Trade ties in with another subject I'm going to address today, and that's the 2007 Farm Bill. You know, this is an opportunity for us to assess what's working and what can be improved. Now, we started this process at the USDA, as you know, last year by holding listening sessions all across this nation. We encouraged farmers and ranchers to come to the forums so that they could share their concerns with us. I conducted more than 20 sessions myself, which means about 60 hours of listening. I got kind of good at it after that much time. I had the chance to hear about the state of American agriculture directly from people I admire, the farmers and ranchers of America. I must say it was a wonderful experience. There really is no better way to understand agriculture than to get out of Washington, D.C., and to listen to the thoughts of farmers and ranchers. As President Dwight Eisenhower once said, farming looks mighty easy when the plow is a pencil and you're 1,000 miles away from the cornfield. Well, we held these forums and we listened very, very carefully. We heard consensus on some issues and pretty varied opinions on other issues. In general, our conservation programs were very popular, got broad-based support. Our rural development programs got really unanimous support. It was quite remarkable. Wherever I went, people supported these programs. We heard from a few producers who told us that they were happy with what was happening with the 2002 Farm Bill. And we heard from producers who felt that in the next Farm Bill, support had to be distributed more evenly. In the United States, 5 program crops received over 90% of our subsidy payments. Meanwhile, farmers who farm specialty crops, which incidentally are now equal in value to the program crops, receive virtually nothing from the subsidy support. In fact, 60% of all farmers receive really no subsidy support because they don't raise program crops. That means the majority of farmers aren't getting benefits from the current farm policy. What I find especially interesting, though, is this. Specialty crop farmers were not coming to these forums or coming to me and saying they wanted to be treated just like a program crop. Not at all. They're arguing instead for resources to support research, to address sanitary and phytosanitary issues, to increase trade promotion. In short, making investments that will help them succeed in their open marketplace. I believe in providing a safety net for our producers. But a true safety net for agriculture is much more than subsidies. It is good farm policy that opens and expands markets. Some people have made the argument that with the stalemate in the WTO negotiations, we should just simply reproduce the 2002 Farm Bill. I'll be honest with you, I believe that's the wrong approach for a number of reasons. The first is that, as I told you, our support isn't equitable now. I don't think anybody could debate that. I think that we should be investing in programs that benefit farmers and ranchers across the country, whether those be research programs, rural development investments, conservation, or others. I also believe we should protect our policy from challenge. Several WTO countries have indicated they intend to challenge our trade-distorting programs. I believe we should protect our policies from challenge rather than allowing them to be dismantled by litigation. I firmly believe that federal investment in agriculture is a good policy, but there's more to it. It should be equitable, it should be predictable, and it should be beyond challenge. We all know one thing: agricultural policy is enormously complex, and we're making sure to give it thorough consideration. To that end, we compiled summary papers of the topics we heard at the Farm Bill forums. And from those papers, we extracted a number of subjects that merited further analysis. Now, we've released 5 analysis papers on risk management, conservation, rural development, and energy. And just 2 days ago, the final paper came out. And it talks about providing the foundation for the future growth in agriculture. I encourage anyone interested in U.S. foreign policy to read the papers on the website. The papers do not contain policy proposals. Instead, they're studies of current policies and possible alternatives to enhance our discussion as we head into the Farm Bill. It is my hope that it will spark informed discussion. Now, concerning energy, it's amazing how quickly $70 oil changes markets. And we've had a major change all across America. With producers, all producers facing soaring energy prices, energy clearly will be a priority consideration in the next Farm Bill. In this regard, the opportunity for bioenergy and bioproducts has never been greater. USDA's rural development alone has invested more than $420 million in renewable energy, and we're intensifying our efforts. From 2001 through last week, nearly $4 million in rural development has been leveraged to about $30 million for a variety of renewable energy projects right here in Missouri. Energy from agriculture offers tremendous opportunity for the rural economy. USDA's latest estimate indicate that an increasing percentage of the 06-07 corn crop and soybean crops are going to renewable fuel. Specifically, about 20% of the U.S. corn production will go to ethanol use, and about 8% of U.S. soybean production will go to biodiesel use. And as we allocate resources to bioproducts, we're looking well beyond comparing the direct production costs of bioenergy to fossil fuel-based energy. We're looking at the bigger picture, benefits not so easily measured, what bioenergy provides beyond energy, like increasing commodity prices, raising farm income, reducing farm program costs, and creating jobs in rural America. And from October 10th to 12th, if I might mention this, USDA and the Department of Energy will be co-sponsoring a renewable energy conference right here in St. Louis. This conference will bring key leaders together. It's an opportunity to tackle some of the challenges related to the advancement and expansion of renewable energy. Of course, we have a long history of tackling challenges. The conference will be a great opportunity for us to do that. It's designed to help create and strengthen partnerships and strengthen strategies to accelerate commercialization of renewable energy industries. Renewable energy, ladies and gentlemen, holds great promise for the ag community, but also for our nation. It is important that we continue working to make it financially viable alternative to fossil fuels. Animal identification has been another one of my priorities, and we're making progress. We now have more than 300,000 premises registered. States and organizations are just doing a great job getting it underway, and we're working to get systems in place for animal identification. We're approving private and state animal tracking databases for producers. We're approving identification devices such as ear tags for cattle. But I've heard concerns about the confidentiality of the data, and so if I could, I'd like to address that. At its core, the system is a critical tool in safeguarding the health of agricultural animals from disease. When it comes to an outbreak, time is money. The ID system enables health officials to stop the spread of the disease and lessen the economic and other social impacts. Everyone in this room understands the consequences of an outbreak, the loss of breeding stock and labor and time, and animal pain and suffering and money. Quick identification of infected animals means less exposure. The faster we can assure our consumers and trading partners that our animals are healthy, well, it's critical. Premises registration is our top priority. Without this foundation, the system would not work, and it's this kind of competitive system that we're trying to achieve. Those who have expressed concern that the system is bureaucratic and administrative should note the strong private sector involvement. From the time I held the first conference on animal ID as governor of Nebraska, I felt I had two clear opinions I was working with. The best approach is voluntary, and the system should be driven by the private sector. I firmly believed then and continue to believe today that the best innovation, the best price competition, the best opportunity for producers is the voluntary system that is in the private sector. I understand that the disclosure of information affects a producer's ability to bargain for a best price. As someone born and raised on a dairy farm in Iowa, I can tell you we are going to do all we can to protect the confidentiality of this information. That's why I've directed our Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service to create an animal ID system that will hold the information about animal movements in the private sector or state databases. Animal movement information registered in a private animal tracking database is private, not USDA records. USDA doesn't own the data, and therefore we have no control over it. With that, let me wrap up by saying it's a fascinating time to be in agriculture, an exhilarating time to be Secretary of Agriculture. Not too many years ago, if you looked at the Farm Bill, it was pretty straightforward. Title I was dairy, Title II was wool, Title III was feed grains, and so on. Today we have a conservation title, a rural development title, an energy title, among others. That's a strong indication of where the next Farm Bill is headed. Again, I can't prejudge what Congress may do in the 07 Farm Bill, but I can guarantee you it's going to be a fascinating debate. The world is changing. Rural America is changing. The rural economy is changing, and we need to change with it. As we press for market access on the world stage, a healthy debate is underway here at home about how best to create farm policy that is equitable and predictable and beyond challenge. Agriculture is our nation's first industry. It's an important contributor to our economy. It embodies the values upon which our country was built: hard work, family, faith, and opportunity. I commend the members of the St. Louis Agribusiness Club for promoting agriculture in this area by bringing together the agricultural forces of the area to address challenges and opportunities. By doing so, you're affecting the future of agriculture and the future of this area and the future of our country. Thanks for your time today. Thank you for having me. May God bless you all.